James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good Friday, everyone. Good Friday, heading into the weekend. Hope you have a big weekend planned. Gee whiz, I know a lot of you got a big weekend planned next week. 4th of July weekend, oh mama. And it's going to be a good one, too, what with the 4th falling on a Tuesday and all. Reminds me of the old days. Ah, yes, it does. Go up to the good old Lake Erie, get on the boat, you know, and just have a big, long weekend with Monday being the 3rd and Tuesday being the 4th. A lot of people will have just a great boating weekend on the Great Lakes and here in Southwest Florida. And I hope everybody remembers what the 4th of July is all about. And of course, that's next week. We got a lot of time to think about that. And we've got a good show lined up for you today. We're going to have Jeff Kovic coming up at the bottom of this hour, the Save Darfur Coalition. We're going to talk about that, a subject that we have sadly neglected a little bit too much on this program, and he's going to have a lot to say about the situation going on in Darfur right now. Sadly, the world is not making near enough noise about that horrible, horrible situation over there. We'll have him on. A lot to talk about today. Of course, being Friday, we're just going to kind of let it go wherever it wants to go today. I have not prepared a bunch of remarks. I have not prepared an agenda for today. Kind of just taking it easy on a meandering Friday on the radio. That's kind of what we'll do today here at the TIB Broadcasting Building. That's right. So, we're glad to have you along with us, all the folks over at the Hartman chat room, the Head On Radio Network chat room, and the folks at the various websites around. We're very, very glad to have you along with us this afternoon, and we hope to inform you and entertain you until 5 o'clock, and that's what we're going to endeavor to do. What do you do on the weekend? Got to shoot us off an email here and let us know what you do on the weekend. Do you work all weekend long like I do? Do you ever get a day off? Do you go to the beach? What do you do on the weekend to relax? You sit around and watch the tube? Who knows? Kind of fun to have a day off now and then, and I bet a lot of you do a lot of different things. What do you think about this, this terrorist situation just right across the state from us here? My God, am I relieved. I can't tell you how relieved I am. Whoa! I heard that last night, and I thought, my God, they have saved us. The Bush people have saved us from certain death. So why, these people were planning on just blowing up everything in sight. That's what we're hearing today, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Of course. And it's good to know that they are really on the ball and saving us from these people who just planned on blowing up everything in the country, evidently. The Sears Tower and what else? Big buildings in Miami, all over the place. I feel so much safer today. If any of you got any comments today, I hope you give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. There's a lot to be said about this, and how many of you know about this, this new NAFTA superhighway? When I first heard about this a while back, I thought it was a joke. It's not a joke. The NAFTA superhighway, going to run a big, I don't know, 4 football field wide superhighway. I'm not kidding. Right up from Mexico all the way to Kansas City and all the way up to the big terminal going to be in Kansas City, going to run it all the way up to Canada so that they can run all this stuff from China. Yeah, from China into the ports in Mexico and then on this superhighway, and they can truck it all the way through North America. What do you think about that? Kind of a weird, weird idea, I think. And, of course, we've got the news that the minimum wage is going to stay right where it is. Didn't you know that? I agree with somebody I read somewhere that said they ought to have the senatorial and the House of Representatives ought to have their pay tied to the minimum wage somehow. Just amazing what these people do. I can't help but mention this. Got an email about an hour ago, and it infuriates me that, not that they people send these around, because you can send whatever you want to on the internet, that's fine, but what really infuriates me is that there are people who believe a lot of the crap that goes around on the internet, accept it as fact, and mention it to everybody they know as if it were truth. And I am fascinated by that, that you could just get something in an email. And a lot of you will know the one I'm talking about. Pulls at your heartstrings, you know. They send this one, and the title of it is, Remember This. And it's a big picture of New York City when the Twin Towers were still standing. And it says, Remember This. And, of course, that's to remind us that the 9/11 happened and the Twin Towers were there, and hell, has anybody forgotten that? No, I don't think so. But it's amazing what they do with it then. They hook it up with Ollie North's testimony in front of Congress, supposedly telling that bin Laden was the most dangerous man in the world, and that's why he had the security system put in his house and all this. And all, of course, all of it's a bunch of bullshit. It fits right in with all of the Bush lies about why we went to war in Iraq, and that's what this whole thing is about. That's why it's sent around. It's sent around to remind all of us why we're at war in Iraq, why we have now occupied for some time now the sovereign nation of Iraq, because those dirty Iraqis knocked down the Twin Towers. That's what this is all about, and that's what these crazy, uninformed right-wingers think. It actually is what they think. And so this thing keeps circulating and circulating and circulating. Of course, I send it back with all the information needed to debunk the entire thing. In fact, actually, there is a letter published by Oliver North himself saying that he never said that bin Laden was the most dangerous man in front of Congress, and that he was never questioned by Senator Al Gore, as this thing says. Just more right-wing, shameful propaganda and hypocrisy. So I know a lot of you have seen that. Beautiful picture of the Twin Towers in New York City. Absolutely beautiful. But saying in there that it was Al Gore asking Ollie, and, you know, trying to make a fool of Al Gore. They just never give up. They never give up with this kind of stuff. Never. And, of course, we've got the kiss of death, if you will, the political kiss of death given to Joe Lieberman by none other than Ann the Man Coulter. I wonder what Joe Lieberman thought when he heard that Ann Coulter was endorsing him and asking him to come over to their side. I just wonder. Just wonder what Joe was thinking. It's been great, in my opinion, to see the Democratic senators coming out and debating the Iraq war and what we got to do to redeploy our troops and when and where. And these are all questions that will have to be answered unless we really do want our troops to stay in Iraq, that quagmire over there for another 20 years. And I read with interest where Senate Republican Whip Mitch McConnell said, and I quote him, it's been interesting to watch the Democrats debate amongst themselves. I'll bet it's been interesting, since McConnell and so many of his fellow partisan Republican senators have chosen to actually rubber stamp an utter failure of Junior Bush's policy in Iraq and would have no idea what the word debate means or looks like. I don't think they'd know a meaningful debate if it bit them in the ass. I really don't. To me, it's been very interesting watching the Republicans do absolutely nothing as the gas and oil prices get higher every single day. And I was also quite interested to see the debate they didn't have when they stacked the courts with the right-wing justices. No debate on that from them. And one of the most interesting things was seeing Ricky Santorum the past day or so nearly peeing his pants with excitement over pre-1991 rusty shells found in Iraq with degraded chemicals in them, as useless as and outdated as an 8-track tape player in the day of iPods. I don't know that I've seen anything so embarrassing and so ridiculous from a politician in a long, long time. Santorum, and as you can see on all of the right-wing talk shows, most of the Republican pundits and right-wing politicians and talking heads are running like hell from that comment. they don't want to have anything to do with it. Nothing to do with Ricky Santorum. Didn't you think he looked a little bit crazy out there saying that? Didn't you think he looked like just desperation? And of course, that is what this is all about. He's some 18 points down in the polls to Casey right now, and his desperation. But the Republican Party, most of them, and the amazing part about it is, here is Santorum, that's one of their icons. Oh yes, Rick Santorum, one of the neocon conservative icons, absolutely one of the big boys in the party, looking like an absolute fool. And now all of a sudden they don't want anything to do with him. He's radioactive in the Republican Party. He's down that 18 points to Casey. You're not going to see him hanging around with Ricky Santorum anytime soon. He looks like the loon. He finally, to some of his own people, looks like the loon that he really is, the dishonest character that he actually is. And we've got Senator Joe Lieberman, the Connecticut Democrat, facing a stiff primary. The challenged Lineley because of his pro-war stance, and he said he would oppose the Democratic amendments that came up. Joe lost his heart and his soul. And I've said this before, and I'm saying it again, I hope he's soundly defeated come election time. Any man or woman who tells his own party that they shouldn't criticize the president on the conduct of this Bush war and occupation is telling individuals within his party to ignore their conscience. And believe me, that is what they have been doing, is ignoring their conscience. And we're hearing from people on the chat room saying, from Johnny O in the chat room saying, he's in total desperation. It's down to 19 points behind now. Well, Johnny, it keeps looking worse for old Ricky, and you had to know it would get worse after that. You just had to know it. You know, back to Lieberman, it's really a paradox. He's trying not to look partisan, so he's defending a war by an extremist, radical, neocon partisan who mock real healthy and necessary debate. And I think, I happen to think he'll be sorry for having taken that position someday. To me, it runs against, anything Thomas Jefferson ever warns about. And I'm more than concerned about having been lied to about the reasons for being in Iraq, concerned about the total lack of security in Iraq, concerned that citizens in Iraq are being repressed by those theocrats within their communities. Joe Lieberman is cooked as far as I'm concerned. I can't see that he's going to be able to come back from this. I am hoping that Ned Lamont can win that battle up there. I certainly hope so. I don't see why not. The last credible poll that I saw showed Lamont catching Lieberman. That's why there's all this talk of you know, him turning independent. This I got to see. This I got to see. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. All the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace and tell me.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes in the federal and state government?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here at, about, 20 minutes after the hour. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Welcome, everybody. And good to have such a great audience with us, such a well-informed audience. 866-546-5254. We'll get to your phone calls in just a moment or two. I promise we will. We were talking about Joe Lieberman running as an independent. I don't know. Let me just state right up front. I'd like to see Joe Lieberman out of the Senate. Out. Period. Gone. Joe Lieberman has not been good for the United States Senate. The people up in Connecticut might like him. I don't know. It appears right now that there's a large contingent of them that don't care for him anymore. And I certainly hope that they can get Joe Lieberman. That's my 2 cents worth. And we'll see what anybody else has to say. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
It's Alice from Northern California.
Hi, Alice.
In so many ways, they try to cause all the soldiers to believe that Iraq attacked us. I heard Condoleezza Rice speaking to the soldiers in Iraq. She was saying, always remember, we did not bring this war to you.
Yeah.
You brought this war. The lights went out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. They've done everything they can to propagandize it, even our soldiers, which is a very, very, very sad testament, I think, when you've got to propagandize your own soldiers to get them to fight over there. It's a shame.
Yeah, saying that it's your fault, not mine.
Right, right. We didn't want to have that war over there, but we had to. you know, they've tried to convince the whole world of that for such a long time now, And you know, it's one of those situations where when this whole thing first started, the Germans, the Russians, the French, countries around the country saying that it wasn't justified, we shouldn't have done it.
No.
And here our government just excoriated the other countries for saying that, calling them old Europe and all that sort of thing. Well, guess who was right? You know, they were right all along.
That's right.
Oh, well.
We had a lot of warning.
Yeah. Yes, we did. We did indeed have a lot of warning. Bush was warned about it. Now we see the other day what he told the guy who briefed him about them using airplanes as terrorist weapons. What he told him that he actually looked at the guy and said, "Now you've covered your ass," and then he went fishing. You know, I would be so ashamed if I were president of the United States and had told somebody that.
He has no conscience.
No, obviously not. Obviously not. That points out what these people brought up about electing him, you know, because he was a good Christian man. A good Christian man has a conscience, and it's obvious that this man does not, never did. I can't see a hint of a conscience in the man at all.
No, that's right.
Alice, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. It's Alice from California, and you too can give us a call, 866-546-5254. I see we've got a lot of new listeners, and I'd love to hear from all of you. We are streaming the show. Well, if you're listening, you know we're streaming the show, and you know where we're streaming the show if you're listening. I guess that was kind of silly of me to say that, wasn't it? We've got Jeff Covey coming up in just 7 or 8 minutes or so. Going to talk about the Save Darfur Coalition. I'm sure most of you know what an awful situation that is over in Darfur right now, and it looks like perhaps the world community is getting ready to do something about it. I certainly hope so. And speaking of propaganda, which we were a little bit earlier, it's amazing, is it not, that the Bushes have been telling us that we'll stand down when the Iraqis stand up, and we're going to stay there, and we're going to stay there and help them out. We're just going to do the right thing. We're not going to cut and run. The Iraqi people want us out of there. There's a new poll that says 70% of Iraqis favor setting a timeline for the redeployment of U.S. forces. 70%. Now, this is what the Bush people are saying. Oh, no. Oh, no. We can't do that. That wouldn't be right. Oh, no. That wouldn't be right. We couldn't just run out of there. Well, why not ask the Iraqis what they want us to do? and we find that 70% of them want us out of their country. I'd say those would be the folks maybe we ought to listen to, wouldn't you? Not the politicians. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Okay, sorry, I didn't realize I was there.
Yes, you are.
I was actually talking to my son at the same time. I'm off of the Tom Hartman's chat, and one of the things I've been wondering is, do you think if we printed up the Declaration of Independence as a petition, would people sign it if you asked them to? Will you sign the Declaration of Independence?
The original?
Every grocery store? The original. Not the original original.
I don't.
A piece of paper. Photocopy it over reams and reams of paper if necessary. And sign it. Hand it to people. Read it to them. Will you sign the Declaration of Independence? I don't think there's a person in this state that would say no. I don't think there's a person in this nation that would say no.
I think you're right.
So people, somebody, I can't do it myself. I do not have the ability to make the PDF file. If you make the PDF file, get on the Hartman's chat. We can get this thing going. People are ready to do it. We've got people who will take it to Washington, D.C. We have people who will take it to the U.N.
Yes.
But I can't make the PDF. Somebody make it to me. Talk to me. I will get it going.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm afraid, don't even know what the Declaration of Independence is. I think there's a lot of people that don't know what the Constitution is. Obviously, the Bush administration doesn't know what the Constitution is. I'm afraid they have no clue.
But the Declaration of Independence does not have the Constitution in it. It doesn't just have that word. And
right.
That word is being bantered around so much that it's becoming a club by which we, the people who are trying to get people to wake up, are getting beaten with.
Well, we are, in fact, and it's
so change the meme.
It's something I've been preaching all along this week about how we don't have the big megaphone we need to get our message out to people on the left. We've allowed the people on the right to beat us over the head with a club for so long now that I think the people on the left are just used to it. I see somebody on the chat room there says I can probably get up a PDF. So
yay!
Yeah.
I've been trying to get this up and past all of the people who've been talking, and it's been going so fast and furious that a lot of times it scrolls off before people can get back to it.
Yeah, well,
so
take,
we've got it.
Take a look on there now. The Benedict at Large says, get with me. I can probably get up a PDF. So take a look on there right now. So hey,
that
thanks.
That would be great.
There's thanks.
One other quick
yes.
thing I'd like to say,
yes.
though. If we get up in the streets right now and make a big stinking a lot amount of noise where the whole general populace and the Bush and companies can think we're actually getting somewhere now, like today or tomorrow, they're going to have even more time to beat us over the head with their stuff before everybody starts really starting to pay attention in 2 months before the election. We got to work our butts off but also keep our heads down a little bit so that they can't nail us.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for your call.
People. Let's get it moving.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, it's coming up toward the bottom of the hour. It's time for us to stop for a break and get a hold of our guest that will be coming up here in just a moment or two. Don't go away. We're going to be right back, and we're going to have a great guest for you.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. Who's on the hill and who's watching the valley? who's in charge of it all. God bless the army, and God bless our liberty. Jack up the rest of it all. Them in a position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq, get back on the track, and let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
And we're back. Thanks for being with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. We've got quite a bit of time left in the program, and we're going to devote some of it now to a subject that's been too long ignored, maybe not just here, maybe not just in this country, but all over the entire world. And I am pleased to welcome Jeff Kowick from the Save Darfur Coalition to the program. Jeff, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Guy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's imperative that we start talking about this and in a more meaningful way. And I see that finally, the world is starting to talk about this in a more meaningful way. Are they not?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think that there's a lot that remains to be done. And of course, people are still dying by the thousands. But at the same time, it's an issue that's starting to resonate and starting to catch on with individuals across our country, individuals like all of your listeners and also in other countries as well.
Can you, if you will, please give us some background on just what the what precipitated the situation in Darfur and what the situation, where it is now?
Sure. What it amounts to essentially is a region called Darfur, which is in western Sudan, very large region about the size of Texas or France, so we're not talking about a small plot of land. And this region traditionally has been marginalized by the Sudanese government, which the capital is Khartoum. They've been marginalized politically, financially, and in 2003, in February of that year, some rebel groups from Darfur took up arms and attacked a government military outpost. The government responded not by directly attacking those rebel groups at first, but by unleashing what's known as the Janjaweed, and it's a proxy militia. It actually translates from Arabic as devil on a horseback. The individuals in Darfur are African Muslims, and the government, as well as the Janjaweed militia, are Arab Muslims. And they've allowed this Janjaweed militia to go through and have carte blanche as they've attacked civilians and rebel groups as well. What it's resulted in is 400,000 individuals dead and over 2.5 million in refugee camps in Darfur and also in nearby Chad at this point.
Okay, so let's be clear about one thing. How much oil is in this area?
Actually not much. I mean, one of the problems with Darfur is that...
That's one of the problems, isn't it?
It doesn't have much in the way of resources, and it's something that we can touch base on or talk about a little bit later, but the scarcity of resources there is now having a tremendous impact on individuals that are in refugee camps as well. One of the things that happens to individuals is they have to go out and collect firewood outside of the refugee camps. Now, the refugee camps themselves aren't exactly safe areas. The Janjaweed tend to prey on the on individuals that leave them or get a little bit away from them. they've had to start going further and further away to collect firewood to cook the little amount of food that they can get from aid organizations. And that's because there just aren't many resources, natural resources, in that area. And it's leading to basically more rapes and more murder. What it amounts to is men and women in refugee camps, husband and wives, sitting down at the dinner table, or what amounts to a dinner table for them, and determining who goes to pick the firewood the next day. And if it's the man and he's caught, he'll be killed. If it's the woman and she's caught, she'll be raped. And about 100% of the time, the woman goes out and they just don't speak about what happens.
Oh, my God. What about the children in this case? Are children surviving this at all?
No. Unfortunately, the short answer is no. They, obviously, they're more prone to some of the sicknesses, and they're just more vulnerable to not having any food. Sadly, the Janjaweed don't distinguish between killing men, women, and children. They kill everybody who's innocent, who they can get their hands on. It's horrific, and the images are horrific, but what it amounts to is the Janjaweed have been known to throw babies up in the air and try and catch them on bayonets. It's just an awful, awful situation, obviously.
Oh, human nature at its finest. Well, we think we hear of some progress taking place, and then we find out, as I'm told, that President Bashir in the Sudan right now is not sure that he wants the UN to come in and help. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, you think of it yourself. If you're the leader of a government who's been committing genocide against his own people, generally speaking, you're not going to be supportive of an international organization like the United Nations coming in and putting an end to that. So he has expressed his opposition recently, claiming that these would be colonial forces coming in. There actually is quite a bit of precedent. Southern Sudan, there was a conflict between the north, where Khartoum is, and southern Sudan, which is predominantly Christian. That was one of the longest-lasting civil wars in Africa. It lasted about 20 years and just ended a year or two ago. There are now UN peacekeeping forces in southern Sudan that are helping to maintain peace there after a peace agreement was signed. What we're hoping is that the same could be true of Darfur, and that United Nations peacekeeping forces can come in and to try and keep the peace there, just to basically provide simple protection to people so that they can return to their homes or where their homes used to be and try to start their lives again.
Well, now we're told that President Bashir is actually invoked the name of Iraq in all this, that he doesn't want his country to become another Iraq. Is that not true? He's using that?
He is saying that, and it's clearly posturing. That's not something that is likely to happen. The United States is not pushing to put its own troops on the ground there. What we're looking for is a multinational United Nations force that comprises, as most United Nations keeping forces do, a very large amount of troops from Muslim countries, contributing countries that are predominantly Muslim, that is. At this point, I believe about 50% of peacekeepers around the world come from Muslim countries. And I don't think that this peacekeeping mission would stray too far off from that either. The Arab League has actually supported a handover from the current African Union forces there to the United Nations as well. So I don't think there's much weight to Mr. Bashir's arguments there.
How about the people? The people, do they look forward to having someone come in and help with the situation?
You see mixed reactions from the media reports, but I think it's safe to say that those people that are in refugee camps recognize where there's hope, and that hope is in a force that can actually come in and protect them from being raped and murdered and all these horrific things from happening to them. So, I think understandably there's a sense of frustration among those people right now. They've been thrown off of their land, their houses have been burned, their water has been destroyed so that they can never go back and live the same way that they did before, which was pretty simple to begin with. At this point, I think they understand that their hope really lies in a United Nations force.
As far as the size of a force that would be needed there to really be meaningful help in that situation, and there is already a force of what the African Union troops in the neighborhood of, 6,000-8,000 people there, troops there. What's really needed?
Estimates have pretty much run at 20,000 United Nations peacekeeping force. There's actually a technical assessment mission that just completed earlier this today, I believe, of both African Union and United Nations officials that have been in Khartoum and in Darfur for the last 2 weeks. And they are going to take the information that they gathered to put together a planning document or plan for action on a UN peacekeeping force, which would then go to the Security Council for a vote. That will include a number of what would be needed and necessary for peacekeeping troops there. But mostly it's been running at 20,000 is the thought from most experts on the ground.
All right. We've got how many refugees now? 200,000 or 300,000?
No, actually 2.5 million refugees at this point, and internally displaced people, which is just to clarify the name of a refugee that's within their own country.
All right.
So it's a significant amount of people.
Yeah, I think I'm talking about the number of people that have died.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're looking at number-wise, and these numbers are obviously very difficult to determine precisely, but it's over 400,000 over the last 3 years. Of that 400,000, a good percentage of which have been killed as a result of essentially genocide by starvation. And what's happening is the Janjaweed and the government prevent humanitarian organizations from having the same level of access that they need to do their jobs. As a result, they're unable to get to certain places to provide food, water, medical aid, and possibly up to half of those 400,000 have been killed as a result of these policies.
So would you say there is enough aid available now to feed and house these people? It's just the fact that you can't get it to them, or is there enough aid?
I would say that it's probably somewhere between those two. Mostly, I think there's a good amount of aid money that's flowing into Darfur at this current moment. Now, there's a couple things to know on this. One is that once individuals start to return home, and hopefully there will be a way for refugees to return to their areas in Darfur, there's going to be a significant humanitarian need for many years to come to try to reconstruct the lives that they had. Even though they're very simple, there's still going to be a cost to that to help people rebuild their huts and to provide them with ways to produce on their land, because the Janjaweed very much have a scorched earth policy that is going to prevent or at least minimize the amount of arable land that's still available for them.
The thing is, we're not talking about rebuilding a country in Europe here. We're not talking about a place where the cost would be an overwhelming cost to rebuild. These people's needs are minimal, are they not?
That's very true, yeah. I mean, if you look at pictures, and I encourage everybody to go to our website, www.savedarfur.org, and to look at some photos on there of the types of huts that we're talking about. We're not looking at creating enormous infrastructure. We're looking at giving people the basics so that they can return to the lives that they had before and produce their own crops and their own their own needs down the line.
Jeff, why has the world community been so lax, so far behind? Come up missing on this issue for so long?
You know, it's a good question, and I wish I knew the answer to it. I can say that our own government, to its credit, was the first, and I believe the only at this point, country to label what's happening in Darfur as genocide, which is precisely what it is. Other governments haven't done that for one reason or another. Other governments, however, or other countries have had more media coverage earlier on in the conflict that has brought this to people's attention. At the same time, I think there's a great amount of hesitancy following what we're seeing in Iraq and Afghanistan of involving ourselves in another situation like that. And I think that's a misconception, because that's clearly not what we're looking at in Darfur. It's not part of the war on terror. This is basically providing protection to millions of individuals who are innocent of doing anything other than being born in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge difference between the occupation of a country, a war, and a humanitarian effort, and that's what's primarily what this would be instead of a military effort, would it not?
Yeah, precisely. It's been described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis, and that's precisely what it is. At the same time, it's also a political crisis, and that, this needs to be resolved not only through providing aid, but also through political channels, because that aid's just not getting there for, for the reasons I mentioned before.
Is it the fact that the rest of the world looks upon the almost the entire African continent as just not being a worthwhile member, a productive member of the world community as of yet? Do they look at the African continent as just being, well, to put it bluntly, worthless in the world community?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to speak for those governments, of course, but at the same time, I think that any country is motivated to do something that is in its self-interest, and sometimes that self-interest is idealism, and it's to protect people. Other times it's for financial reasons. At this point, I don't know why that the governments haven't seen this in their self-interest. You know, it's starting to get there. It's starting to build a little bit of momentum, but there's certainly a void and a lot more that could be done in order to protect the people of Darfur immediately. You know, we're looking at a United Nations force, and that's going to take at least a couple months to get on the ground if it goes through. What needs to happen right now is to provide the African Union forces that are there. You said earlier there are about 7,000 of them there, and they are doing an amazing job with what they have available. But there's a tremendous need for them to have more money and more technical assistance in order to do a better job. You know, they don't have the same satellites and technology that members of NATO have. They can't see Janjaweed troop movements, you know, before they actually arrive at a location. And they also don't necessarily have the mandate to protect people there. They're really an observation force based on what's been going on over the last year or two.
And they're facing resistance from the government there.
That's correct. I mean, the government is the key stakeholder in the area, in the region, and in the country, and that resistance does prevent them from doing certain things. I think I've heard a story where they have to get their oil or their petrol for their trucks at, I believe, the airport in Khartoum, or this happened a while back, and, you know, the government obviously controls the access to that. So they very much are on very thin ice as far as being invited guests in the country.
Some of the infighting, the political problems, we have this gentleman, and I'll murder these names. I'm not so good at them. Minawi?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
You know, he's got trouble maintaining his life after working to sign this peace deal there. Why?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. I mean, there are many tribes in the area, and they have their own particular interests in the outcomes. Mr. Minawi did sign the Darfur peace agreement back on May 5th. Two other rebel groups, the two other main rebel groups, did not. Mr. Minawi is part of a group called the Sudanese Liberation Movement, the SLM, and he is actually one faction of that. There's another faction of the SLM, as well as a third group called the Justice and Equality Movement. And those other two groups decided that the Darfur peace agreement wasn't in their citizens' best interest. And that's unfortunate because this was a step forward, and we're hoping that they sign on to an agreement that provides more protection for their people. But there are a few stakeholders in this conflict, and those rebel group movements aren't exactly all on the same page, unfortunately.
So we have a situation where no one trusts anyone, no one trusts each other. We've got the government, which is the main culprit in the whole situation. Well, what is the UN looking to do to not only preserve the peace, but to replace the government there somehow?
No, and that's an important note. I mean, what we're looking for from the United Nations force is really to go in and to provide basic buffering and protection so that innocent civilians aren't being killed, so that the Janjaweed can't come to a village of 20,000 and kill everybody in that village. You know, we're looking for just basic buffers, and we think that the United Nations can provide that. That said, they need to have a robust mandate. The United Nations force can come in under two different mandates, and this is all worked out at the Security Council. One is a Chapter 6 mandate, which doesn't have any teeth to it. They're not actually a protection force. They're more of an observation force. The second is a Chapter 7 mandate, and that's going to allow them to actually protect people. You know, they're going to have whatever they need to make sure that the Janjaweed can't come and kill innocent people.
Well, if the government, in fact, is turning a blind eye to the Janjaweed, and we're wanting to send in people to protect the people from this terrorist group, you might as well say, an internal terrorist group.
Internally, within, sure.
What, you know, the root problem isn't being taken care of, is it?
As far as the government? Or the
yes.
Country? Yeah, it is an issue, and it's not something that we can do much about as a coalition. Our mandate, really, as our own, is to provide or to push for an active protection force. I think that down the line, there's going to need to be some accountability, and that's for sure. We can't, as a human society, allow government leaders to remain free from when they're culpable for things like killing 400,000 people. But I don't know that it's the United Nations force that's going to go in and enforce that at this point. I think the first step is to just send in a force that can actually just provide protection and make sure that nobody else dies unnecessarily or needlessly or in such a horrific manner as those that have died before.
Is the UN going to make an effort to bring all these different groups to the table and get them to talk this over? I mean, I see that the rebel groups, you know, one peace deal after another has been rejected from some of these rebel groups. Is the UN, is the group going to get involved in that?
Yeah, and the UN has been active as the support mechanism for the African Union. The AU has really been driving these peace deals, or this peace deal rather, because it's been the peacekeeping mission, or it's been mandated with the peacekeeping mission. This is the first African Union peacekeeping mission ever, and they have a tremendously strong interest in making it as successful as possible. They recognize their funding shortfalls and the need for United Nations support and the need to hand this over to the United Nations, but they remain a very active player in supporting the United Nations in a partnership. And the UN has been very much involved there. It's really just a question at this point of getting the member states and the Security Council to sign on to a Chapter 7 mandated peacekeeping resolution to try and get those troops in there as soon as possible.
All right, a funding question.
Sure.
Is there any estimate of the kind of money it's going to take to do this?
Yes and no. Unfortunately, at this point, you know, as I mentioned, this technical assessment team went through over the last 2 weeks. Their report or their findings, which will be presented internally, at least at the UN, over the next few days and week or two, are probably going to start dictating what that financial aspect is. The United States actually plays a very big role in providing funding for the African Union, and that's probably the first thing. If, you know, for any of your listeners that are looking to do something that hear these horrific stories and somehow want to help, the first thing that we can do is to ask Congress to support some of the financial measures that are coming up next week when the Senate takes up the FY07 funding bill, or at least the foreign ops portion of that. Unfortunately, at this point, there aren't specific numbers on how much it's going to cost for the United Nations peacekeeping, but I would recommend that all your listeners call into their congressmen and ask them to keep this on their radar and to support the maximum level of funding necessary to make this happen.
Well, we're currently spending $1 billion a week on the occupation in Iraq. We're not talking about any kind of money at all in comparison, I wouldn't say. But the trouble is the $1 billion a week is bankrupting this country. But, you know, congressmen are going to say, well, we can't afford anything else. But the money involved here is minuscule. I'm sure it has to be minuscule compared to what we're spending in Iraq right now.
Yeah, and I believe, and I'm pretty sure that I've heard from the UN official that the United States spends more in Iraq in a day, I believe, than what they spend on peacekeeping in United Nations missions over the course of the entire year. So it's a very small sum of money in comparison. Again, we don't want to get drawn into taking away money from Iraq or comparing it to Iraq. This is just simply a humanitarian crisis, and it's the right thing to do. You know, when 2.5 million people have their lives in danger because the government isn't letting humanitarian agencies get food to these people, we need to do something to remedy that situation.
Well, as a country that has preached human rights for a long time now, and one of the most egregious human rights violations taking place openly in another part, in a remote part of the world, it would seem it behooves this nation of ours, if we're serious about human rights and human dignity and humanitarian aid, this is certainly a place that we've got to get serious about.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it's very much a human rights and a humanitarian crisis, and it's something that we can help a great deal on as a country. To be honest, our president has been great at times and absent at other times. It's somewhat episodic with how much the U.S. has been involved. When the Darfur peace agreement had to get done, he dispatched Deputy Secretary of State Zelik, and it got done. And that was in large part, not only because of President Bush, but because of the millions of people in our country that have contacted him and their congressmen and asked them to put this on the radar screen and make it a priority. And that's actually something that Deputy Secretary Zelik told us, that the rally in Washington, D.C. that we had, that had somewhere between 50 and 70,000 people, impacted the president to dispatch him out to Sudan and to help get this peace deal done. So there's a lot that Americans can do to help make this situation better.
Well, there are many times we think they aren't listening, but they do respond to pressure. They do respond to 50 to 70,000 people showing up in Washington. There's no question about that. And if that's what it takes, why, that's what we've got to do. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. You've enlightened many of our listeners. Again, if you could take a moment or two and let us know what exactly we as citizens of the richest nation on earth can do to help ameliorate this situation. What are your suggestions, A, B, and C, that what we should do?
Well, A is a simple one, and that's just for people to educate themselves on this issue. And I hope that this has been a starting point and has helped some of your listeners who weren't familiar with it at least understand the basics of the situation. And I hope they'll go to our website, savedarfur.org, and we'll start to learn a little bit more about the issue, and there are news updates there on a daily basis. Second would be to call your senator, particularly Senator Martinez, who is the chair of the African Subcommittee on the Foreign Relations at the Senate. I hope most of your listeners will call him right after this piece airs. His number is 202-224-3041. I hope they'll call his office and tell Senator Martinez that he needs to make this a priority. And thirdly, they need to contact the White House. It's as simple as leaving a comment at the White House comment line and telling President Bush that you support a United Nations peacekeeping mission in Darfur and that he needs to use his political weight to get it done. And that's how we as a coalition are going to need to judge the next few weeks the decision is made. He needs to flex his muscle and to get the United Nations peacekeeping authorization done in Security Council with a Security Council resolution. So people can call him, leave a comment, 202-456-1111. That's the White House line. And that's a start. You know, you go to our website and sign up for our email list, and there'll be more action items over the coming months that are really going to dictate whether this is a success and whether we're able to help prevent genocide, or rather stop genocide.
Well, it's something that must be done. We as fellow human beings of those folks on this planet, we must act. I don't see that there's any choice. We must. And, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for being on the program and helping a lot of our folks understand what's going on and how that we can help. And we will pass these numbers on. And it's SaveDarfurCoalition.com?
SaveDarfur.org.
.org, okay.
And I really thank you for having me on and for giving your viewers an opportunity to hear about this issue a little bit more. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. We appreciate your help.
Great.
A tragic situation. And it's not in the news every day. You see an occasional piece on it in the news, but here we are, many thousands of miles away, with literally a horrible genocidal situation taking place in another country. And we as Americans always have compassion. I hope we always have compassion and concern for something like this that takes place all around the world. When there's tragedy, when there's heartbreak, when there's famine and disease and killings like this, we have always come to the fore and helped out. I think the problem here is that a lot of people aren't educated on it. That's why we asked Jeff to come on the program, and that's why we'll continue to talk about this particular issue, because we are a caring country. At least we always have been. And now is the time to respond. And again, call Martina's office, 202-224-3041, and let them know you're interested in this issue as Senator Mel Martinez of Florida. And the White House, 202-456-1111. Now, I want to let you know that when you call the White House, George and Laura won't answer the phone. They have somebody do that for them. Yeah, I know. They do. They've got somebody that does it for them there. But call them, let them know. They've got a phone board there, and they will take down what you have to say. And they have to care what you have to say. So please do that. 202-456-1111. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We've got news coming up at the top of the hour. Don't go away. We got 1 hour of good programming left when we come back.
This is Quality News Network. The government says the 7 so-called homegrown terror suspects arrested by federal authorities in Miami are part of a group that was planning a widespread terror plot, one that targeted Chicago's Sears Tower. And although they are not part of Al-Qaeda, they are being charged with conspiring to support that organization. In Iraq, a number of militants, including a senior Al-Qaeda member, have been captured near Bakuba in an area near where the group's leader, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, was killed in a U.S. airstrike 2 weeks ago. Several dozen Iraqis killed today in 2 bombings, one near a market in Basra, the other outside a Sunni mosque north of Baghdad. And the bodies of 5 of the factory workers kidnapped earlier this week were found today, all of them shot to death. 30 other kidnapped victims are still missing. Saudi Arabian police have killed 6 alleged members of Al-Qaeda and wounded a 7th in a shootout at the group's hideout in Riyadh. In Afghanistan, U.S.-led coalition forces have destroyed an enemy bunker in a southern province, killing 17 insurgents. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow is confirming the existence of a secret finance tracking program launched shortly after 9/11 as part of America's counterterrorism effort, but he insists that the program specifically targets suspected foreign terrorists and is not data mining or trolling through the private financial records of Americans. The Pentagon reports another successful test, the 7th of the U.S. missile defense system, after a U.S. warship successfully knocked down a short-range missile fired from Hawaii. The U.S. and Japan have signed an agreement to strengthen cooperation on missile defense. It's an agreement negotiated before the growing concerns over a possible North Korean test launch of a long-range missile. Meanwhile, U.S. forces are wrapping up massive war games in the Pacific near Guam following 5 days of exercises, the largest there since the Vietnam War. Arizona firefighters are continuing to battle a 3,300-acre wildfire near Sedona, which so far is only 15% contained. Other wildfires still burning out of control in California, New Mexico, and Colorado. In Somalia, a Swedish journalist has been killed in Mogadishu less than a day after the interim government had signed a ceasefire with the Islamic faction that controls the country's capital city. A World Health Organization investigation shows that the H5N1 virus mutated slightly in an Indonesian family where 7 people died of bird flu, but experts insist that does not increase the possibility of a human pandemic. And the Supreme Court is making it easier for workers to sue employers for retaliating against them when they complain about sexual harassment or other discrimination. And the mayor of the nation's 10th largest city, San Jose, has been arrested on bribery charges. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Norm Mineta, the only Democrat in President Bush's cabinet, has announced his resignation effective next month. A government report shows the first back-to-back decline in big-ticket factory goods in 2 years, durable goods orders dropping 0.3% in May following a 4.7% drop in April. United Auto Workers Union says that nearly 40,000 hourly workers have accepted a buyout and early retirement offers from General Motors and Delphi that exceeds their expectations. Anadarko Petroleum, it will spend $21 billion to acquire Kerr-McGee and Western Gas Resources to create the largest independent oil and gas producer with natural gas and Gulf of Mexico operations. A federal judge has thrown out a rule requiring most U.S. hedge funds to register with the commission. One of the nation's largest hedge funds, Peakpool Capital Management, responding to a published report that it is under investigation for insider trading, says that all of its trades have been proper, that it has never received any insider information regarding impending mergers. Today is the day that Merck's cholesterol-lowering drug Zocor loses its U.S. patent, becoming the largest-selling drug yet to be open to inexpensive generic competition. Associated British Ports Holding, PLC, says it has accepted a revised takeover bid from the consortium led by Goldman Sachs, valuing the company at more than $5 billion. Lightsweet crude oil trading at $71.10 a barrel. The Dow is up 21, NASDAQ is up 10, and the S&P 500 is up 4 points this hour. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. We've got another hour of good programming for you available. We hope you'll join us and make it even better. 866-546-5254. After all, this is a talk show, and I expect you to do some of the talking. 866-546-5254. We'll hope you'll give us a call. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I spent most of my life in the Buckeye State. I'm from Ohio originally, and I'm one of those damn Yankees that moved to the South and stayed there. I'll never forget when I heard that phrase. I was in Aiken, South Carolina, traveling through, and I stopped and asked a cop for directions, and he said, "Are you a Yankee or a damn Yankee?" And I fell for it. And I said, "I'm sorry, sir, I don't know what you mean." He said, "Well, a Yankee is someone that just comes down here and visits for a while and goes home. A damn Yankee is one that comes down here and stays." Well, I guess I'm a damn Yankee because I've come to the South, if you want to call Florida the South. Really, it isn't. South Carolina is the South. Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia, the South. Florida is not, well, not Southern Florida anyway. We're all ex-Northerners here, I guess, most of us anyway. And we do run up against resistance from the locals who have lived here a lifetime, and I understand that. But what I was getting started on here is that I'm embarrassed. I've spent most of my life living in Florida in the last, 10 years or so living in Florida, and originally from Ohio. And both places lately have embarrassed the hell out of me politically. You all know what took place here in Florida. I don't have to tell you about the escapades of Catherine Harris and the magnifying glass looking at the hanging chads and all that sort of thing. And then we have the situation that happened in Ohio in the last election with Mr. Blackwell. A lot of things up in the air, what the truth is, what really happened there, the black box voting issue, the not getting enough voting machines out in the Columbus area, the long lines in the Cleveland area. It appears that they did everything they could to rig that election. It certainly appears that way to me. And here we have this year Mr. Blackwell, the Secretary of State, in charge of running his own election, his own campaign for governor of that state. And you would think, one would think, that if a man had any ethics about him whatsoever, which Mr. Blackwell does not, evidently, You would think he would kind of recuse himself from running the election process in Ohio this year since his name will be on the ballot for governor. You would think. But not Mr. Blackwell. This highly moral, ethical man who travels around the state and around the country with the likes of a Mr. Rod Parcell, Reverend Rod Parcell, one of the most scandalous, scoundrel, evangelist guys you'll ever see in your life. going to run his own election up there. Not going to step aside. He's going to run his own election, and God only knows what will happen in Ohio. So far, Representative Strickland has a nice lead on Blackwell, and I just hope and pray it stays that way. But what I was getting at here as far as the embarrassment's concerned, yes, I'm embarrassed about how things have gone in Florida, but man, the stink just keeps coming out of Ohio. Oh, I mean, it's been a nightmare. You know, the thing I don't understand is you really would think that if you were a Republican in Ohio, you would find the nearest rock and climb under it and stay there for a while, because they have been the biggest embarrassment that I have seen in this nation as far as party politics in a long, long time. I see now that Mr. Noe, the infamous Mr. Noe, wants to have all 10 of his charges consolidated into one. Attorneys for Tom Noe have asked Lucas County, that's Toledo, by the way, Lucas County Common Pleas Court Judge Thomas Osowick, to consolidate all 10 charges into a single offense. The attorneys claim that 9 of the theft charges in the 53-count indictment allege that the acts were part of an ongoing activity and should be tried as a single offense. Noe faces dozens of years in prison if convicted on the charges, including theft, forgery, tampering with records, money laundering, and the most serious charge, engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. The whole damn Republican Party in Ohio has been in on corrupt activity. I mean, Governor Taft got charged with crimes. It's filth up there. And then we find, and by the way, someone on chat reminds me that Northern Florida is the South too. Buddy, you got a point there. From Tampa on north up in the big, and I'm sorry to everybody that lives up there, but you're up there talking about the Big Bend area up around Chieftain and places up there in northern, around the Big Bend area. Ooh, look out, baby, look out. You all remember the movie Rosewood? Have you seen the movie Rosewood? Took place up in the Big Bend area of Florida. Not Mississippi, not Alabama, not Georgia, not South Carolina. One of the most awful, horrible crimes that ever took place in this country. Multiple mass lynchings and all that sort of thing took place just up close to the Big Bend area of Florida. So I've said enough about Florida. And I'll be with you on the phones in just a minute. Hang on just a minute. I wanted to keep up this stink coming from Ohio thing here, because now we find, as you know, last week we talked about the senatorial race going on up there. Well, U.S. Senator George Voinovich from Ohio, former governor of Ohio, yesterday acknowledged that one of the Cleveland area investment brokers indicted for allegedly bribing an official at the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation has handled his personal financial portfolio since he left the governor's office in 1999. How much worse can it be? Really, how much can it be? We had Sherrod Brown running for the Senate to defeat Mikey DeWine from Ohio on last week. And here we find out that Mr. Voinovich, his personal investment broker guy, had taken his personal financial portfolio. He's handled... They're into it up to their ears, folks. And it bothers me. It really bothers me as an ex-Buckeye, always a Buckeye when it comes to my football affiliation and my university affiliation. But as an expat from Ohio, it bothers me to see the smell coming from the politics up there. It really does. Ooh, It's nasty. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, how you doing?
Good.
Well, you know, in Ohio and, well, in parts of the South, the motto is vote and vote often.
Yep, well, that's...
You know, that's just typical. And, you know, you mentioned the fact of living in the South. Well, you know, the South used to be pretty democratic, very democratic. And after the civil rights legislation passed, LBJ said, I'm afraid after this we'll lose them to the Republican Party. And that's exactly what's happened with part of Nixon's Southern strategy, you know?
Oh, sure.
And I'm from South Carolina originally. You can probably tell. But I've lived all over. I don't live there now.
Well, I knew you weren't from Brooklyn.
No. But at least I don't sound like something out of Deliverance either.
Well, you sure got a pretty mouth. I just remember that part in that movie. Ooh, okay.
Well, thank you. But at least I don't sound like something from Deliverance.
Actually, that took place in Georgia, as I recall. The big river there in northern Georgia, someplace.
Chattahoochee or something like that, or I'm not sure. But anyway. It was one of James Dickey's things, and I went to school where James Dickey was a professor. Well, he was graduate school. But, you know, I was reared in the South, and as a matter of fact, I graduated from the Citadel. You've probably heard of that place.
I've been to the Citadel.
Okay.
Yes, I have, in beautiful Charleston, South Carolina, one of my favorite cities in all the world.
It is a wonderful city. It has a certain flavor and charm all of its own.
Charleston is the South.
Exactly. And unfortunately, their politics are a little screwed up down there. And in Ohio, they're pretty screwed up, too. They're downright dishonest because, I mean, the last election, in my opinion, was stolen in Ohio, you know, and these people will just do anything to get elected.
Oh, sure.
And this guy is, who's trying to get all these charges consolidated, well, good luck, is all I can say. You know?
I got to tell you, I was down at the Citadel one time. I was staying in Charleston, and Strom Thurmond, and as most folks from
Thurmond quite well.
Yeah, and as most folks know, everything in South Carolina, much as it is in West Virginia for Robert Byrd, everything in South Carolina is named for Strom Thurmond.
You got it.
And he was speaking at the Citadel that day, and I thought, well, you know what? I'm not a Strom Thurmond Republican, but. I would certainly, from a historical standpoint, like to get into the Citadel and see old Strom talk.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't get in. I didn't have a ticket. And so I went down to Meeting Street, and I was sitting down there having a drink in the afternoon on one of those beautiful summer Charleston afternoons. And I was sitting there having a drink at one of those sidewalk cafes, and I got into a discussion with this born and bred Charlestonian.
Okay.
And I said something that I probably shouldn't have, I said something about Strom just being, well, I don't think in his last few years Strom probably had his faculties about him good enough to be a United States Senator. And I said that to the gentleman, and he says to me, as long as Strom has the energy to get up and pull the lever, we will vote for him.
Oh, and, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Strom was just a legend in his own time and in his own mind as well.
Absolutely.
My father and he were very good friends.
Is that a fact? Wow.
Oh, yeah. My dad was mayor of Camden. Camden's the oldest inland town in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he and Strom, well, they were sort of contemporaries and politically good friends. And even though my father was a Democrat, Strom went... Well, Republicans in 1964, I think.
Yeah, Strom was a Democrat, too, before the... Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that whole civil rights thing, really, and as far as Nixon's Southern strategy, you know, it did turn the South into a red state, or a series of red states. It
certainly did.
And it's going to be a hell of a long time before that's undone. I mean, those people just don't forget a lot of things.
And it lives on, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I've forgotten it, and I don't consider myself Southern or Northern. I consider myself an American.
Sure.
And this is something else I want to talk to you about. It's not even related to this. I don't know if you would be amenable to even breaching this subject.
Go right ahead.
I wanted to ask you, and that's about this lieutenant who's refused to go to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know where I come from. When you sign an enlistment contract, and this boy did, he knew what he was doing. He went to OCS, and he went to OCS during the time frame of the Iraq War. And he accepted that contract, that 4-1, that DA Form 1066, and all the parts of the 201 file. Now, what's the deal here? I mean, you know, he says he all of a sudden he didn't want to go.
Do you now, suppose that when
I'll
he
be,
signed?
Now, I'm going to be personally frank here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of sympathy for this man.
Okay.
I mean, he took the government's money. He took their opportunities. He accepted the education benefits. He even went to OCS.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there even further inculcated in the, you know, the military.
Yes.
Now, if the boy had had any sense, he would have gone in the Air Force or the Navy. But he went in the, as a green suitor in the Army and almost certainty of being sent to Iraq. And all of a sudden, he does not want to go.
All right, let me come right back at you here.
If I were on the courts martial board, I would send him to Leavenworth.
All right, so he had the realization that his commander in chief lied to him.
That'll make a difference, guy. When you sign up, your ass belongs to the Corps.
Yes,
there.
But do you not have the right to expect your president to be honest with you?
But, Guy, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the chain of command.
Well, the chain of command, it starts with the commander in chief, and when the commander in chief has flat out lied to you and the entire country about a war, you think that you've given up your right to say anything about it?
You have. I'm afraid under law, you know, that's above your pay grade, sir.
Well,
that's all I got to say.
It may be. You and I are going to agree to disagree on that.
Okay, buddy. You have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye.
If I find out my commander in chief lied to me, I think when you join, that it's a contract, and I'm not talking about anything legal here. I think there's a moral contract between you and your commander in chief in the military. And what the deal is that I will be a good, honorable soldier, and I'll be a good, honorable American, and I'll uphold my duty here to my country that I've said. But you as the commander in chief, and all and the upper command, you're going to be honest with me as well, and you're going to be straight up with me. Let's be straight up with each other. And if either of us violates that, well, then we'll talk about it. That's the way I feel. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, a big part of your Northern California fan club.
Hi, Dave.
I just learned something. I don't know if there's anything you can do about it technically, but if a person is on hold while you're talking to somebody else, your side of the conversation we hear clearly, and the other one almost not at all. So I don't know if that's...
You can't hear the phone caller?
Not the caller. We hear you clearly, but the volume on the incoming phone line is nothing.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you. I can adjust that.
I heard something earlier in the week that I thought I was going to check out with you when I had a chance, and that was that an awful lot of people in Florida are voting on absentee because they don't trust the machines, and they have the hope that in the end they will have a paper that can be manually counted. But I understand from my Brad Freeman, I think it was, that the votes will all be counted on a vote counting machine that will render the papers such that it cannot be any longer manually counted. Have you heard that?
Well, I have, and you know, Dave, I've got a problem with this. I was just mentioning to somebody last night, as it happens. Okay, so we all walk out of there with a receipt. We've all got a receipt, and maybe I'm not well enough technically advised over this situation, but I go down and I vote on this black box voting machine. It gives me the willies every time I have to do it, but I do it, and I walk out of there with a receipt. And so the election board tabulates the ballots, the vote, and they post it, and I see it on local TV that night and everything, and it's not what I thought it ought to be. In fact, it's way off from what it ought to be. and it's way off from the all of a sudden I can't think. What do you call the polls when they come? The exit polls. It's way off from the exit polls, like it was the last time. What good is that paper receipt I've got in my hand going to do me? Are myself and everybody that went there and voted that day guaranteed to get back together and show our receipts and make sure it's counted right?
Well, there are organizations right now that are putting in a backup system in virtually every precinct. There's going to be somebody there allowing you the option to vote on manual paper. So hopefully that's going to be admissible. But I guess the official process will be on the crooked voting machines. But you heard that if the absentee ballots, and there's going to be an awful lot of them in Florida, get counted on a vote counting machine that disables the paper so that it cannot be manually counted. If that's the case, that's just one more outrage to end them all, I think.
You know, Dave, I'm getting used to the outrages here in Florida over voting. That's the problem. We're all getting too used to it.
I'm also hoping that we're going to get some encouraging news, because early in the week you indicated real serious financial problems for the radio show, and so if enough of us have been coming through to try to buy you some more time.
Well, let me talk about that just for a moment. I don't want to bore everybody. I do thank everybody who has helped out with the program this week. There's been a few, not enough. We need some more help with the program, and just be upfront about it. I was going to talk about it at the end of the program today, but we're nowhere near where we need to be, and we hope to. Well, we just hope for some more help with it. I sometimes wonder we may be beating our heads against the wall, but we're not giving
you
up.
You provide easily. Such a real and valuable addition to the airwaves. We got to find a way to salvage you, brother.
Well, tell Bill Gates to give me a call. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Guy.
And let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Guy?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Guy. I'm sorry. I was just calling in reference to your other caller, Jim.
Yes.
I didn't get to hear your whole show, so maybe some of the things I'm going to say you've already covered.
Mm-hmm.
But in reference to Lieutenant, I'm probably not going to say his name right. Watanabe?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it right either. So
okay, the whole interview is on Head On Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
That Bob Kincaid did.
Yes.
Did you already tell your audience that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, they can go to the Head On Radio Network and hear that interview. It's posted on his website. And I encourage everybody to do that. And the one thing I take issue with what Jim said is that it's my understanding, and they'll hear the lieutenant explain everything, is that the oath they take is to uphold the Constitution. That's also part of their oath.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's an unlawful war, that then you do not have to fight. Do not go and kill people, innocent people. And that's what I take from it. And so I do take issue with Jim.
That you don't have to follow illegal orders.
Right, illegal orders.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I don't believe that Lieutenant feels that he's doing anything wrong.
I certainly got the impression from him that he doesn't feel that he's doing anything wrong.
Right.
And
he is a good American.
Jim and I agreed to disagree on that issue.
Right.
I believe he's done nothing wrong. Were I in his position, I would stand there and say my commander in chief has lied, which he has. I think we all know he has, and therefore you have violated the contract that you, the commander in chief, and I, as the soldier, have.
Right.
I don't know. Isn't it sad that we have to even have this conversation? Isn't it sad that we couldn't trust the President of the United States enough that, we send 2,500 people to their death, that we should be able to, not that any war is ever good, but we should be able to sit here and say, well, at least for it was a good cause, and it was moral, and it was ethical. And here we are talking about something that, well, I believe is immoral and illegal.
Right. And the terrible irony is that we are losing our so-called freedoms in this country while we're so-called giving their freedoms to them in Iraq. And the thing is that nobody's getting any freedom.
That's
just
right.
Losing good American lives in this war. And it's my understanding that, you know, they tell us we've lost 2,400 dear American soldiers when actually the number is much higher. They don't count those people that don't make it between Iraq and Ramstein in Germany. And from what I hear that people in Europe know, that it is much more like 1,000 more people, maybe 1,500 more of our soldiers are not counting. Now, that makes it even more...
Well, I hope and pray that they're wrong.
It's a terrible thing. From what I hear, what people are saying is that a lot of Americans know and understand what's going on in this country and over there in Iraq, and people just are feeling terrible, and none of us really know what to do about it. And then we have the Democrats who were supporting, and in Congress, they don't seem to be understanding anything what we feel here in this country.
I am upset with the Republicans. As everybody listening to this program knows, I'm livid about their actions. I'm even more upset with the Democrats right now for not coming together on this issue. It's unconscionable. It really is.
Well, I thank you for your program, Guy. I don't always get to listen to it as much as I want to, but you're definitely a strong voice, and you make everybody feel much better.
Well, thank you so much for listening, and I appreciate the call. And call anytime. It is a good call, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am upset with the Democrats. I'm a lifelong Democrat. Everybody that listens to this program knows that I brag about being a Yellow Dog Democrat. Not feeling too good about the party right now. Not feeling too good at all. Oh, yes, there are a few. There are a few. But I don't understand why. Would anybody tell me why that they didn't have... Well, I know why. But isn't it a damn shame that they didn't have the courage to join Senator Kerry yesterday with his issue on this? Isn't it a shame that there's a lack of guts in the Democratic Party? When are they going to stand and fight? When are they going to draw that line in the sand? See, we've been hearing this for how long now? For how long, Senator Reid and Nancy Pelosi? How long is it we've heard that, we've got to pick our fights. We're not in power, and we've got to pick our fights. When will it be that we pick one fight? When will it be that the Democrats stand together, united, and say enough? When will that be? When will it be? I don't know. I don't know. I've seen no evidence of it. I'm just so ashamed of the party right now. I am so ashamed of the Democrats right now. I really am. I it makes me wonder. It really does. But then again, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Bring it on. Bring it on. We're going to pause for a break right now, and we'll be right back.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'Em On. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February.
When he get back here, he'll bury your home. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. We got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die over young. In some land that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just want to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Back with you on the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. We're having a good conversation with some of the folks today. And by the way, you can give us a call, and I'll get to the phones here in just a moment. 866-5- I almost forgot the phone number. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Won't cost you a penny. So do give us a call and give us your 2 cents worth. We're always glad to hear from you. Let's go to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Mike from San Jose. How you doing?
Hi, Mike.
Well, I was listening to what you said a couple minutes ago, and I've got a good example for you from very recent history, which probably won't make you feel any more optimistic than you already do. Probably will send you in the other direction. But it was Harry Reid and the comments that Tony Snow made about 2,500 dead Americans. It's a number. The thing that concerns me about Tony Snow is that the day that he took the job, not accepted, but the first press conference he had as White House press secretary, he stood up there and cried about his own colon, but he won't cry about 2,500 dead Americans.
Oh.
You know? And the thing is that I've never had cancer, thank God. Whether I end up having it or not between now and the time I die, I don't know. None of us do. So I acknowledge what a devastating disease it is, and I understand how someone who has survived it can be emotional. But the thing is that if you want to get up there and cry about your own experience and the fact that you're still here with two arms and two legs and a job in the White House, you better have some kind of emotion about 2,500 American men and women who put on a uniform and did what they believed they had to do, whether they believed in the war or not. You know what I'm saying? They had an obligation, and they met it. So the thing is, he said that 2 days later, Guy, 2 days after every blogger between San Francisco and New York had ripped this story to shreds and had danced all over Tony Snow, 2 days later, Harry Reid puts out a press release, which is, I don't like that. You shouldn't say that, Tony. You know, and it's like half the crowd is going, too little, too late, Harry. The other half is the normal, woohoo, Harry Reid's on fire. Well, you know, if it's 2 days after the fact, you're not on fire. You're 2 days late.
Well, that's been the party here in the last couple of years, a day late and a dollar short. That's just the way it is. And you know, there's no real outrage. You know, they get up and they do the my good friend, my good colleague thing when the Republicans will turn around and stab them in the back. And I don't expect them to stand up there and have a screaming match every day, but there's such a thing as standing up for yourselves and standing up for your people. And your boy, the point you just made about Tony Snow, man, that hits it hard. That hits it real hard. I I hadn't thought of it in those terms. Right. What a good point you've made. Hey, thanks for the call.
That's, you bet, guys.
That's a heck of a good point right there.
Bye.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. We remember that, and I'll get to the phones here in a second. Our lines are all lit up. Remember that? Everybody gave Tony Snow the welcome there his first day when he got up and got all choked up about his personal crisis. And that's fine. It's wonderful that people have emotions. I have emotions. And the whole country, boy, you know, that's really something with Tony and all that. By the way, I think he's the perfect press secretary for this administration. Couldn't ask for a better one. Couldn't possibly have a better one. He will lie and cheat and with a straight face and with that choir boy face of his up there and be oh so convincing. They could never get a better one than him. But the point just made about him getting all emotional about his own situation and but yet able to look at the 2,500 and say, it's just a number. Oh, God. Back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
How you doing?
Okay.
I'd like to say a few things about some things I've been thinking about that those on the right say about us on the left.
Yes.
And one of them
they haven't said anything nasty about us, have they?
Pardon?
They haven't said anything nasty about us, have they?
I think so.
I certainly hope not. I won't stand for it.
Well, there's one thing I think about, one thing that they don't understand about us, I guess, is that we don't all think alike. I mean, we're all our independent thinkers. They were talking about us not, you know, going into goose steps like they do.
Yeah.
And another thing that I've really been thinking about, and I haven't heard anybody else say this, but anyway, you know how they'll say, well, you should move to another country. You should move to Iraq or whatever.
Right.
You know,
if you love it or leave it.
Right. But you know what? They're the ones that should leave because they don't want to live in a country where you can speak your mind.
Well,
you know, where you can be free and have free thought. They want everybody to think alike. So they need to go somewhere and build their own dictatorship. You know, they all think alike.
Well, God help us if this whole country ever starts thinking like this neocon gang that's in there now. If the entire country ever starts thinking like that, I'm bailing out.
Well, yeah, but, you know, they're the ones that should. They should. You know, they want a dictatorship.
Yeah.
They don't want anybody to say anything. So they should go to the other. They should leave.
Yeah.
Because what about in the revolution? A lot of people wanted just the status quo then. Don't say anything about King George.
That's right. That's right. There were a lot of them.
And did you know, I'm going from one thing to the other. The new enlistment age?
No.
42.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that. It goes up to 40. I'm safe. They're not going to take me no matter what.
Well, they'll keep raising it.
I don't. Well, they're going to have to raise it quite a bit. I don't think they'd want me anyway. I wouldn't be the most pleasant person in the world right now.
But I'll tell you, you know, it just gets from one ridiculous thing to another. I'll tell you, it's just you never know from day to day.
No, you don't.
Whether all of a sudden they're going to jump on to Social Security, they're going to jump on to the gays or whatever, you know. Just,
right.
And I think, like, if the gays shouldn't have any rights, then they shouldn't have to pay taxes, should they?
Yeah. Taxation without representation.
Uh-huh.
Hey, thank you for your call. Thanks
okay,
very
bye-bye.
Much. Bye now. Let's see who else we have here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, Guy, how you doing? This is Terry in Fort Myers.
Hi.
How you doing? I love your show, but anyway, there's a couple things, or one thing that I wanted to throw in here is, you know, 2 weeks ago that the Senate killed the effort to repeal the federal estate tax on multimillion-dollar
fortunes.
Okay, well, yesterday the House of Representatives passed what they call an estate tax cut that is actually, in reality, a repeal and everything but name. You know, the so-called compromise.
Yeah, that's what we call it, the Paris Hilton bill.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the deal is this one that the House passed yesterday would exempt over 99.5% of all of the estates from tax and slash the tax rates on the rest of it. But the real problem is, that I see it, is that it's going to cost a minimum of $760 billion in the first decade, the first 10 years, 600 of which is going to be borrowed, and the other 160 is going to be the interest that has to be paid on that, which is going to be picked up by the taxpayers, which means they are now shifting almost $1 trillion over the next, or three quarters of $1 trillion of taxes over the next 10 years from the very top to the very bottom, and that's got me, what's the correct
word? Got you what? Say it.
It's got me pissed off.
All right. hasn't that been the idea all along? I've said from day one that they're practicing smash and grab politics ever since they got in. They're grabbing everything they can get. The question is, will the Democrats, when they get back into power, if they get back into power, will they have the guts to overturn some of this stuff? That's the question. Will they?
Well, it remains to be seen, but I am as much, if not more, disappointed in the Democrats than you are. And at this point in time, I think there needs to be a clean sweep.
I've got a big old broom I'd like to use. I can tell you that. I certainly agree. I don't see the old fire in the belly of the Democrats that I'd like to see right now.
No. There's some hangers-on and some people that are, you know, doing the career thing. And, you know, I don't really have a problem if they're really working for the people. But when they sit back and they don't do anything other than maybe once in a great while throw out some kind of token gesture of maybe a dissent, that's not what they're there for.
Well, it's like we mentioned a little bit earlier. We've been waiting for them to pick that fight they've been talking about all along, and wouldn't this have been a good one? The new estate tax deal is an exemption up to $10 million in a family, $5 million each for you and your spouse,
right?
Which eliminates, how did you say, how many was it? 99 point what?
In excess of 99.5% of the estates from tax.
Okay. And these people want to call this a death tax. You know, they started calling it the death tax because they thought average Joe citizen sitting home there said, gee whiz, when I die, they're going to take my estate away from me. No, you got to be worth over $10 million for them to tax it at all. And average Joe Republican sitting out there saying, well, I just can't have them taxing my estate. And it's 99.7. Oh, man. Doesn't it show you how gullible the electorate is?
Well, that's very true. But see, what I have been doing for a long, long time is I've been putting the facts in front of people, say, this is what the congressional record says. I show them where to go, you know, on thomas.gov, to go find the damn record. Right there it is. This comes directly from the floor of the Congress and the Senate. Okay? What part of this do you not understand?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and so many times, and I know you've come up against this by doing that. So many times, people will look at you and go, "Well, you know, that's just some number. You can't believe that." You know, it comes from coming from their own government right now, and they still won't believe it. There's a certain number, and evidently, it's got to be somewhere around in the mid 30% that you know you can't change your mind no matter what.
Oh. There's no question. I mean, that's just fact, and I've come across that a lot, and it's, you know, it's really not a it's not really anything that I really worry about. I'm concerned for those people because those are the same people that well, the same type of people. Let me rephrase. It's the same mentality of the people who supported Hitler to the very end.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I knew a couple like that. I knew a couple like that that lived not far from my hometown. Who was a their son was a friend of mine that I went over. He was I'll tell this quick little story. He was an SS officer. His father was this friend of mine's father was. He was an SS officer, and he'd been brought over here by the Lutheran Church because a lot of them were getting killed over there after the war. You know.
Right.
And so they got him over here because he was an SS officer, and the reason he got out of the country safe and sound because he said he was like an accountant for the SS. Okay, I guess that made it all right. But you can't imagine my shock when I went over to the house one day and met his parents for the first time and sat down and heard this man tell me how wrong the world was about Adolf Hitler. I'm listening to this with my own ears. And I went home and told my father this, who was in the Second World War, and he says, come on, get in the car. We're going over there. No, Dad, no, we're not. I mean, this actually happened. So, you know, there are people that hang in there no matter what. I don't know why I got off on that tangent. But
Well, there's some guys from the Second World War that, and when I say some guys, I have met some guys, I'm sure there's a huge percentage of the guys are the same way. You start talking some trash like that, and I don't give a damn what their age is. They're ready to rock and roll right now.
Oh, yeah.
They will get in your face unequivocally.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean, those
you
are my
betcha.
Kind of men.
Yes, yes, indeed. You bet. And my father was certainly one of them. I'll never forget that day when I came home and told him that story. His face, I mean, I'd never seen a reaction like that in him. His face turned beet red. God rest his soul. And he looked at me and said, come on, get in the car. We're going over there. I talked him out of it. Oh, man. Hey, thanks for your call. Thanks so very much.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening to the program.
That's a great show. Thank you.
Thank you. Ah, yes. That brings up a memory for me. It sure does. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. I hope you'll give us a call. We've gotten some new callers today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. On a serious note, not that we haven't been serious here for the whole show, but I just want to take a moment early in the week. In fact, starting on Monday, we spoke to people on several forums around the Internet and mentioned the fact that this program is completely donor, listener supported. And we don't have a salary. We don't have a staff. You're listening to it right here, right now. A director, producer, a host, the whole ball of wax. And it costs money to put a show on the Internet. We have expenses with it. And if, as we've said before, if one person out of 100 would support programs like this, why we wouldn't have a problem keeping it going. So I hope you'll consider, if you have not, and my goodness, my tremendous thanks to everyone who has responded to our appeal this week, and there have been some of you, and I have tried to, and I hope I haven't forgotten anybody, but I've tried to respond to each and every one of you, and I thank you from the, I guess, the proverbial bottom of my heart, wherever the bottom of your heart is. There's another one of those things. Where did that come from? But I do want to thank you so much for taking the time and being generous enough to donate to the program so that we might keep it going for you. We're trying to make the show better and more interesting than ever. We've got a lot of great guests in the lineup coming up for you, people that, just for example, next week we're going to have Katrina Vandenhoof on of The Nation's Magazine, one of the finest guests that you'll ever see in the program. We've had Scott Ritter. We've had many great guests on this program, and we'll continue to do so. We had, you know, Joe Connison, Eric Alderman, so many of the great authors and activists and politicians. We've tried to have them on the program, and we'll continue to do that. That was one benefit of going to the Take Back America conference. We did get quite a nice lineup. We were talking to Ambassador Joe Wilson there, and we'll be having him on the program here again some of these days soon. We did make a lot of very, very good contacts there at the program. Let's see. So we do hope you'll go to theguyjamesshow.com and donate to the program and help us keep it going. I read something very disconcerting today, when you got the second in command of the U.S. forces in Iraq saying that we are our own worst enemy, I think we're in more trouble than I have been thinking all along, that the second in command would say that the American troops are antagonizing the Iraqi people so much that the Iraqis are striking back and killing our troops is a monumental statement. A monumental statement. I mean, how can it be that the Bush people even allowed him to say that? I was shocked when I read this. Isn't it an admission that our very presence in Iraq is driving this insurgency? And I think we all know that it is. He says that a number of civilian dead and wounded is an important measurement of how effectively the U.S. forces are interacting with the Iraqi people. And I'm talking about this Lieutenant General Pete Chiarelli. And let me quote him. He said, "We have people who were on the fence or supported us who in the last 2 or 3 years have in fact decided to strike out against us." He's not talking about Al-Qaeda people here, folks. He's talking about Iraqi citizens. And he said, "And you have to ask, why is that? I would argue in many instances we are our own worst enemies," Chiarelli said. Chiarelli said, "If fewer civilians are killed, I think that will make our soldiers safer." He's actually saying that the death of civilians at the hands of U.S. troops has fueled the insurgency in Iraq. That's exactly what he's saying. So here's the good news, I guess. The Lieutenant General said that U.S. soldiers are killing and injuring fewer Iraqi civilians this year in a so-called, in these escalation of force incidents at checkpoints that we've all heard about and near convoys than they did in July of last year when officials first started tracking these civilian deaths and injuries. Escalation of force incidents, which is what they're called, usually involve a U.S. soldier giving a verbal warning or a hand signal to a driver approaching a checkpoint or convoy. We heard about those two women just a couple of weeks ago that were slain. One of them, a pregnant lady, killed because they didn't understand the signals and drove through a checkpoint. The situation escalates if the driver fails to stop, with the soldier firing a warning shot and then shooting to kill. An unidentified military official who asked not to be named said there were 3,000 escalation of force incidents from last July until December 31st, and 16% of those incidents led to civilians being killed or injured. This is a terrible thing to read. And my question is, after all this, if we are our own worst enemies, then why don't we take our own worst enemies out of the equation? If that's the problem, if we're our own worst enemies in Iraq, and we're antagonizing the Iraqi people that much, why is it that our legislators in Washington can't understand that it's time to leave Iraq? Why is it they don't have the guts to stand up and take a stand on this? Why is it? I'll tell you why. It's because they're, once again, afraid of that right-wing media machine that we so often talk about on this program. They're afraid of political consequences. Instead of standing up and speaking their mind and their conscience and the minds and conscience of their constituency, they stand there and act like cowards. Political cowards. And they have this political cowardice because they don't want to lose their offices. That's first and foremost in the minds of these people, you see. It's not doing the right thing. The right thing to them, to many of them, to most of them, dare I say, is keeping their office no matter what. And we have to weed these people out to think that way. We must. Not for the good of the party, for the good of the country. To hell with politics on that. If you're a Democrat or a Republican, it makes no difference to me. If your number one aim is keeping your office in Washington, D.C., then you don't deserve to be there. You should never have been there in the first place. You should go there for the right reason, which so many of them do, and then have their minds changed by the old hands that have been there and then fill them in on what it's really like. Folks, that's up to us. It's not up to them. It's up to us to recognize this terrible fault in our politicians. And it's up to us to make sure that we change it. We are the ones that have the power to change it. Definitely us that has the power to change it. And we must. And first of all, we've got to make sure we have fair elections. All the rest of it doesn't matter unless we have fair elections. Something that's being totally ignored by our Democratic and Republican politicians. Something that's of great concern to everybody. We can't have a free nation without free elections. Well, that's about all we have today here on the Guy James Show. I do want to thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you calling the show and letting us know what's on your mind. And we appreciate you listening to what's on our mind. And we'll continue to let you know. Thanks so much. You've been listening to the Guy James Show. I hope you have a fabulous weekend. I plan to. And as always, I want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great one, folks. See you Monday.